You're listening to the Clutter Fairy Weekly, a weekly webcast and podcast brought to you by the Clutter Fairy in Houston, Texas. If you'd like to participate in one of our live webcasts, please visit cfhou.com/weekly. You'll find a calendar of upcoming webcasts, as well as instructions for joining the Zoom meeting via the app or by phone. We'd love to see you. That URL again is cfhou.com/weekly. Now here's the weekly episode. Enjoy.
Hi, Clutter Fairy fans. This is the Clutter Fairy Weekly for May 16th, 2023. I'm your co-host, Ed Gumnick, and I'm speaking with Gail Goddard, certified professional organizer and owner of the Clutter Fairy in Houston, Texas.
Hi, everybody. The Clutter Fairy Weekly is the webcast and podcast that digs deep into the clutter that piles up between you and the life you want to be living. We explore the habits and behaviors that lead to clutter, and we suggest strategies to slow the accumulation, reduce the collection, and comfortably manage the stuff we decide to keep.
I forgot to share the slide that shows the where our show notes will be, so I'm going to put that up right now.
All right.
And for our podcast listeners, if you'd like to see the show notes for this week's show, you can visit cfhou.com/TCFW167. If you're new to our Zoom meeting, we want to let you know that you can share your comments and questions via the chat, and I'll try to make sure Gail gets to them before we move on to another topic. You can also use the raise hand feature to ask if you'd like to ask a question or make a comment yourself via audio or video. And we're streaming the webcast live on Facebook, so anyone watching there can share your questions and comments, and I'll relay them to Gail. We're going to start by recapping last week's weekly tittle, which was called A Clearer Vision. The assignment was to create a vision for how decluttering and getting organized will benefit you. We'd love to hear from our participants in Zoom and live on Facebook. Who worked on a new or updated vision this week for their organizing projects? Please let us know in the comments. Frequent contributor Marsh shared a few statements that she wrote in response to the tittle. And she also did some work, I think, on the collecting images, but I don't have those to share. Here are Marsha's statements. When I'm organized, I will be free of the final clutter hoard pile in my living space and home that confronts my living in my space and home. When I'm organized, I will do the hard-won keystone habits each day of keeping my life clutter and hoard free. When I'm organized, I will have the pure organic pleasure of living in my own home as I did in my former home.
I love this vision that Marsh is expressing here. She's imagining herself living in a clear space with new habits to keep it clear and greatly enjoying her life living that way. What an expressive and focused vision it is. Congratulations to Marsh for nailing her vision assignment. She can always refer to that vision as she makes progress on her space. And we look forward to hearing about you living as you've envisioned it. We're going to hold that space for you.
Connie says, I have so many visions, I might be hallucinating.
That's okay. Just keep having them. It's not going to hurt anybody if you have a few visions extra of your clear space.
Let's get on with our main topic. If people come in with tittle reports, we'll insert them a little later on.
Okay.
Because we're not getting any tittle reports so far.
All right.
Okay. So photos, heirlooms, and other mementos can strengthen family ties and help us connect with our history. But many of us inherit or accumulate these precious items as a seemingly random, unsorted, unlabeled, and uncurated mess. Today, Gail is going to offer some strategies for managing family photos, heirlooms, and other priceless, in quotes, memorabilia.
If I were to take a poll right now of everyone within earshot today and ask you all how many of you have a box or boxes of unspecified, unidentified, unorganized photos and other papers that you've inherited from deceased relatives stashed somewhere in the house, I would lay bets that 99.95% of you have such a stash. Organizing the photos is a project that gets handed down from generation to generation without anyone quite getting around to doing it. Everybody agrees that the photos should be organized and labeled and marked with names and information, et cetera, for future family generations to enjoy. but no one seems to step up to actually make it happen for probably the same reasons that you're avoiding the project now. I don't know who all these people are. I don't know where this is. I don't know whose house that is. I can't tell what year that is. That and the volume of material there is to sort and how important it all seems to be. If you don't want to pass that long, incomplete project to the next generation without even the information that you have about people and things in the pictures, you've got to face the project and make some headway. It's time to face the music, so to speak, and get that collection sorted for your own future family historian. To get started on our irreplaceable theme today, let's talk about heirlooms first, mostly because that category implies furniture and 3D objects like lamps or bowls or the random grandma's sewing machine table. Those items get labeled heirlooms because the object has stayed in the family for a few or for many generations. The actual value of the item isn't necessarily based on its age. For most family heirlooms, the value is from the story of ownership by the long deceased relative. It's the fact that great-great-great-grandma Harrison owned that darning ball back in the 1920s. It's possible that it might have some monetary value too, depending on what it is and where it came from originally, but more likely than not, that monetary value is inflated by the family story and the family pride in owning that object. For example, think of how you evaluate items at a garage sale. For you, it's someone's cast-off items that are worth bargaining over with the owner. For the owner, these items were once worth what they paid for them, and haggling over their price is kind of insulting. You see what I mean? It's all in the point of view. Some heirlooms have some value just based on what they are and what kind of market exists for them. However, don't let that value get inflated in your mind by the millions of times your grandma said, that's worth a lot of money. Because that's just your grandma telling you a tale most of the time out of her pride for the family belonging. It doesn't have monetary value just because your grandma says it does. Be realistic and objective for a minute and let an expert tell you the truth about something's value. It may have had value in the past, but it might not be the collectible that everyone is collecting now. No value stays high forever. An heirloom is important to your family, but it may not be important to anybody else. You don't want to get hung up on keeping something that has value, and I'm saying that in air quotes, when it doesn't actually, especially if that's the only reason that it stayed in the family. Next up, we're going to talk about memorabilia, which I define as other papers besides photos. Think about greeting cards, business documents like home sale documents, souvenirs like brochures and tickets and receipts from traveling. These are the kinds of things people save along with all those photos. It's the paper trail of life experiences that are needed while the life event is happening, but aren't needed after the life event has taken place. Those things that everyone thinks they're going to use to craft into a wall-hanging shadow box with all the cool tickets and the flyers laid out with some souvenir that they bought. And those shadow boxes are very cool when they're made up and hung up on the wall. And the truth is that the next person to inherit your shadow box will have no memories of all those cool places you went or the things that you did. And that shadow box won't likely stay in the family after you're gone. There are some cool papers to review and read through left over from prior generations. Even an old sales receipt from 60 years ago is fascinating because of the old prices on it and the logo and advertising graphics from back in the day. Even so, these kinds of papers are most likely interesting to artists who want to use them in their artwork as backgrounds or embellishments. A few historians might want a random piece of paper here or there, but the majority of what you have stashed in your house is nothing much except interesting to look at. If you suspect that you have a document signed by Abraham Lincoln, then by all means, take it to a document historian to determine its authenticity and its value. If, on the other hand, you have random documents from your family's random moments through life, then the only person who cares is in your family or an artist outside of your family. So the moral of the story is, paper is just that. It's paper. It might be worth a few dollars, but mostly it'll just be interesting in a curiosity sort of way. So decide how much curiosity you want to keep and how many pieces you want to verify their value, and how much can finally go to the recycling bin. Don't pass the family's trash on to the next generation unless you can find a very good reason to do so. And now what you thought this talk was really going to be about, which is photos. Photos were the first visual real-time record of moments in time. Before that, people recorded historical events with sketches and written narratives, and family members got portraits made. That was the only way to keep a record of a specific moment. Then came photographs. Now anyone can make a record of any moment in time and how precious they were, and how unstable the technology of the early photos, and how costly it was in the beginning. But like all technology, the process becomes more stable and less costly over time, and that was true of photos too. For a while, printed photos were the thing to do and how you recorded everything. Print photos were the Instagram of its day. Now all those photos are digital and stored in the cloud and posted in various apps online and carried around on our phones. But back then, those photos were taken on film, sent to a processor, and prints came back. And you just inherited all those prints. So it's time to get sorting. Remember that we were running around with a camera in hand and hardly any skill at taking those photos. We pointed and clicked and hoped for the best. We pointed at everything we saw. We showed everything we were doing, and the resulting photos reflected that lack of skill. Those photos you inherited of your fifth birthday party or of your mother's fifth birthday party were taken by your grandpa with his brand new camera, and he didn't understand how to use it yet. There are a dozen shots for every one good shot, and they were snapping photos like mad, hoping that at least some of them would be good enough. Try to remember the circumstances in which these photos were taken as you sift through them. It's no different than us taking a bunch of photos now showing our food. Who's going to care 20 years from now what we ate last Tuesday? The same is true for those photos that you're staring at now. So sort them by event, pick through them, pulling out the good ones, leave behind what's out of focus, photos showing the random neighbors you don't know, the classic photo of the birthday table set with a cake, but nobody actually in the photo. Someone was trying to capture a moment in time. And you can find the best representative photo of that moment in time and let the rest go. And if it's an event in which you have no idea who these people are and what they're recording, it might be time to let that moment sink into the sands of time now and let it go. If you suspect that there are family members you don't know in the photos, then by all means, put some photos aside to show some other relatives. It might be a photo of their paternal grandparents and you wouldn't know who they were, but they'll be happy to have them. A lot of photos will just be random people who were in someone's life at the time that don't mean anything to anyone else now. Many photos will be random places that the family went, and you don't need a photo of the random hotel you stayed in as a kid one summer. Many photos are true travelogues of trips someone made, and they mean nothing to anyone except the person who went on the adventure. Adventures by photo are not nearly as fun as adventures in real life, so keeping those photos are truly not necessary to anyone's history at all. And the moral of the story here, all those photos are not family history. Sure, they record what the third grade birthday cake looked like, but that's not what is important to family history now. Filter those photos for the people and places that are meaningful to your family going forward, not just meaningful to the person who took those photos at the time. Find the representative samples of any people or events that are important to the family and let go of excessive prints of those same people and events. Find a few really good shots of your mother in high school and let the rest go to recycle. You don't need a book's worth of photos for every person or event. You need a few reference points for special people and special moments in time, and that's about it. Find the gems, preserve them, label them, and pass those story down. Let the rest of it go. Anyone who inherits his curated collection after you will find going through it interesting instead of overwhelming. They'll be able to enjoy some family history instead of moaning as they drag boxes of random photos they just inherited back to the closets at their own house. That's the moral of that story. You've already dragged that box to your house. And you do not want to let somebody come behind you and have to drag it to their house.
We're going to go to some Tittle reports first, because I don't want to lose them in the chat.
Okay.
M said, my vision had to do with recapturing the peace and serenity of my former life. I wonder if that is a reason that I tend to hang on to things.
It might be. There might be some attachment there for those things that remind you of the peace and serenity of your former life. I could see that. So maybe what you're really aiming for is a way to feel peaceful and serene in your current life, and finding the things that help you do that now would be useful. And maybe having some of those things from your former life help you remember and help you focus in that way. And it might be time to try to think about, you can't actually be in your former life and you can't go back to that place. And so then the question is, what memories of that life can support you now and being peaceful and happy now? And shifting your focus a little bit to try to make it work for you now is more important in terms of accomplishing what you want.
Diane has been giving us progress reports in previous episodes about her project. And she said, oh boy, did it. We got new carpet, moved everything out, including closets, moved the basics back in, looks so good without so much stuff. I'm trying to put my office things back in an organized manner.
And hopefully filtering a little bit as you go so you don't put everything back in. Wouldn't that be awesome? And I think it's important to have a picture with, like, take some photos of the space without everything all the way back, so you can remember this is how clear it could be. and make sure that what you decide to put back went to clutter court and justified itself. Remember we talked about clutter court last week?
Right.
Someone suggested that in the room and it was so great. And I think having that thought of, okay, we made it beautiful. The carpet's lovely. Here's our new space. And if it needs to pass clutter court, it needs to justify itself before it comes back in. You know, go through that process of thinking out loud, does this really need to be in here? Is there really reason to cover up the pretty carpet with this thing? Do I really need to add this back into the house and make it justify itself?
Well, that,
and good luck and congratulations. That's so exciting that you got it done. You got the new carpet.
That situation is very, you know, it's very similar to moving. And
yes,
we always recommend using moving or the idea of your next move as a way to get focused on what really needs to be in here. What's really going to need to be in this space?
Filters. Just because you moved it all, you touched it all, right? Like it all got unearthed and disturbed. And so it's already destroyed. It's already pulled out of the way. So you might as well take the time to filter it and not put it all back in and be very judicious about what goes back.
Paula reports, I didn't do any vision work, but went through Christmas boxes and got rid of 5 things. Also mailed off a box that was sitting on the kitchen counter for too long.
Yay. Those little chores are always like, oh, thank God I finally mailed that box away. Sometimes it sits there and mocks us for too long. So when you finally make the chore happen, there's a big sigh of relief on the other end. Oh, thank God I finally sent that out. Good for you. And going through Christmas and getting rid of some things is excellent. So good job on that as well. Christmas is hard, and it's good to filter if you can.
Connie shared, I spent a few weekends one summer helping my mother-in-law organizing her many photos, putting them into envelopes, then took those and mailed them to the people. I'd like to do the same. We're fortunate that mom did some of that project, but there was an enormous trove of photos and mom went through them and pulled out a few, you know, a little of everything for each of us and put together 6 albums for.
Wow. She really made 6 albums.
Yeah. One for each kid with, you know, wow. some photos of all the grandparents and other relatives who were, you know, a big part of our childhood. And then of all of us with kind of an emphasis on the child whose album it would be.
Right.
You know, so like all the school photos for each of us, or maybe not all the school photos, because that's a lot of school photos.
Yeah.
And, but yeah, enough to see the changes over the years.
Isn't that fascinating? So at some point, some downstream relative of yours is going to inherit all those albums.
Right. Yeah.
There's going to be somebody who's the last man standing with all six albums.
Well, there are seven grandchildren, so...
Oh, good.
So,
Spread it out.
Yeah, right.
That's awesome.
Adrienne says, we may be the last generation that know the people in the photos.
Exactly. It's true.
With print photos, yeah.
Or have some memory of being in their presence, right? Like, there's definitely photos that I have that are from... You know, that I inherited that... from mom who got from grandma, and like there's people in there that they weren't living when I was born, and so there's always only a couple of generations living that recognize and remember the people that were there, and otherwise you've just been told that was great grandma whoever, right? And so you got to write down what you know, because you're going to probably be the last one that knows at some point.
Yes. Yeah.
And I do find, and I mentioned that about the photos and sharing with other family members, because if you think that they're family members and you just don't know who they are, you need to make sure you ask. Because I often hear stories about, oh, we had this picture of their family that got taken and they didn't have that event, or they didn't have a family, they didn't have a picture of that grandma or whatever, and you've got the only photo that means something to the other part, another branch of the family. And so if you think it's got family members in it, it's worth trying to share them and see if they remember people. But it's it's super important to go to your elders, go to the grandmas and grandpas and say, who are these people and who are they related to?
Someone remembers.
Right. Get it down. Absolutely.
Deborah says the advantage of growing up as the youngest of 17 is that there are very few photos. our youngest sister complains of the same phenomenon. You know, there are a million photos of the firstborn son and about 8 photos of the last child.
Yeah, no, isn't that the truth? By the time you get to the last child, nobody has any time to pick up a camera, right?
No energy left for photography by that point.
No, absolutely. That's so true.
Ann asks, can anyone recommend a good and fast, reasonably priced scanner for photos? And Samudra said, I was just looking. The best I found was the Canon LD something 400. It cost $80 on Amazon. So that's a lead.
Okay.
I'm guessing it's not called the Canon LD something. I'm thinking right. There's probably something that stands in for that something, but
right.
That's a start at least.
A model number, right? Good job.
Several people reported being in good shape on photos. Several people in the chat have said that they're in good shape.
Oh, good for y'all. Good job.
Joyce reports, I began re-decluttering the family document hoard and began scanning some docs and photos.
They were doing what?
Joyce said, I began re-decluttering the family document hoard.
Oh, I didn't
and began
understand.
Scanning some docs and photos.
I thought she was saying that she was adding to it. I was confused. Good job. I'm glad you're going through it. It's always fascinating look, this is where, great grandma, whatever, bought this piece of property. And those, deeds are interesting, and old business documents when great grandma, great grandpa, who's he was that had a cigar store, and these are, the advertisements from his store or whatever. There's always some, interesting paraphernalia that's left over from people living their life. But there's also just like my grandmother used to mail my mother. She would cut articles out of the newspaper and mail them to my mother as interesting things that mother needed to read. And so there's, it's like if you don't throw them away in the moment, then they become stashes of letters from my grandmother that have newspaper articles about things that no one cares about anymore, right? Like So it was just her way of, oh, look, I read this in the paper and, you know, Suzanne will think that's interesting. And she would mail it off and like, okay, yes, you're a retired person and you have time to do that. And after mother read it, like it didn't need to stay, it needed to go. And so anything that didn't got missed then becomes a random newspaper clipping that somebody had. And I do find in people's collection of photos and memorabilia, lots of clipped out newspaper articles. It must have been a thing back in the day to say, oh, look, this was in my paper and mail it off to some relative in another state. And yeah, there might be some, you know, random interesting pieces in there, but mostly it's recycling that shouldn't have been mailed across the country. That's what I'm saying. Oh, it's time to let that stuff go to recycle.
Nicolette, who's watching on Facebook, asked how to deal with all the emotions sorting out photos.
It is hard. It is very, if it's all people that you are familiar with and it makes you sad from loss, if you're still processing grief, it makes it difficult. I think that photos are not anything that you can accomplish in one sitting, first of all. Like, it's just never, the volume is always too great to do it all at once. So I would limit the amount of time that you do it in one sitting. You know, maybe agree to sit down for half an hour or sit down for an hour and then set a timer. And when the hour's up, then you get to get up and walk away. So that if you're finding it to be too overwhelming, you know, you just have to hang in there for 30 minutes or 45 minutes or an hour, and then you can let it go. And that means that you can visit the emotion, have it a little bit, and then stop and go on about your day, go away from it again. And bite it off in bite-sized pieces is what I mean. Don't sit there and spend 4 hours reading through stuff that just makes you ever more sad and upset. That's going to torpedo the project 100%. So do it in little bits. And it might also help if you do it with someone. I think a lot of what makes it easier for us to deal with is if we are able to share the stories with somebody. Oh, this is your grandma, or this was my great grandmother, or, you know, ask somebody to sit with you and go through them with you. And then as you're looking at them, you can tell the story about them. And there's some relief in sharing the tale and sharing who it is and what it was about and what was happening in your family. And being able to say that information out loud to someone, whether or not they know who the person is, doesn't matter. You're just sharing your memories out loud. And that's some relief for people. It feels less distressing if you're telling the tale instead of just sitting in your feelings of loss about that time of our life has passed, or this person is gone now, or we don't live there anymore, or whatever. If there's more traumatic responses, some people talk about because there's trauma in the family, because they experienced, if they had negative experiences with certain family members, or if something really terrible happened, if there's some situation that is triggering for you in a way around trauma that is triggered by looking at the photos, then I would make sure that you do the work and also have scheduled time with a therapist to talk about it so that you can get some professional support. I don't want to send anybody down a rabbit hole and have them have their PTSD triggered by looking at the photos. If you feel like you need that level of professional support, then get it and make sure that you have a chance to talk to somebody after you look at the photos, and make sure that you're having a chance to process how you feel about it. Most people can just reach out to family or friends. Leisha and I have done that with photos about that are of my mother or our family, and we can sit and look at them together. And then we sort of talk back and forth between each other about it and our I remember this and she remembers that, and we have a conversation over it, and that makes it a little bit easier to bear as well. So I think sharing the review and sharing the tales, the stories, makes it, it's like spreads the burden amongst two, and it makes it easier to deal with them.
Yeah. Now, if you're not dealing with that level of trauma, you just know that the photos are going to really require a lot of emotional engagement. You could speed up the project to some extent by doing a quick pass through, just to cull the stuff that's junk, the blurry ones, and the end of the roll where there's only half a photograph and that sort of stuff.
Yeah, and you know, the duplicate prints where they went and they gave you back a package that was two of everything or three of everything, that kind of stuff. Yeah, like you can do some of the chores that are less emotional just by, I'm just going to flip through here long enough to look for things that are blurred out or came out black or I don't recognize at all, things that are easy.
M said, for my 1980 trip, I have a roll of black and white European film that can't be developed in the USA.
Oh,
I would think you might be able to take it to a good camera shop that does developing on site, and they might be able to do it manually. You know, the reason that it can't be developed here is different size standards, so that it doesn't fit in the automated equipment, perhaps.
Right.
And they should still, someone should still, you know, a photography studio at any rate should still be able to do something with it, I would think. But if it's from a 1980 trip, it might not even still be worth the trouble, you know, because it there may have been enough degradation.
Yeah, the film may have degraded a lot at that point. I mean, there's probably boutique developers out there.
I would think,
you know, solopreneur people out there who are doing that kind of stuff that would be able to do it by hand instead of in a machine to
might
see
not be,
what's
might not
out
be
there.
Cheap.
Yes, it might not be cheap, but.
Amanda says, I gave my dad a slide scanner for Christmas one year and it never got used. I should have known he wasn't a tech guy. It came in handy when it was time for me to sort through the slides. I finally saw their wedding photos. Now the images are saved digitally.
That's cool. I'm glad you got to find the wedding photos. That's awesome.
And Amanda said that was an Omniscan scanner that she found on Amazon.
Excellent. Scanning slides is a lot of work. Again, around photos, the process of keeping stuff and digitizing it, scanning things so that you can throw the paper away, it takes a lot of work. It's a lot of time and effort. So it just like clutter cord, it needs to be worth the effort, right? Like mom and dad's wedding photos, worth the effort. A random shot of a European vacation with no people in it, not worth the effort. So that you definitely want to only do the stuff that is worth spending your time doing.
M says, I like the photos of forgotten relatives because I can see physical features that are carried through the family.
Oh, interesting.
That is an interesting
looking at the genetic pool
aspect of old family photos is you can go, oh my gosh, look, whoever this old lady is, she looks like my sister.
I actually heard a tale yesterday that I have to tell you. I thought it was very funny. A friend had a couple who they didn't have kids and all of their relatives were deceased. And so they collected, they had collected 10 or 12 portraits of random people. And they just adopted the people and made up stories about them. And so they hung them. They had a wall of portraits that had 10 or 12 portraits in it that were people supposedly related to them, but they weren't actually. They were just, these are, relatives people that, you know, the relatives don't care about the photos anymore, or, you know, there's nobody left alive that is related to this person. And so we adopted the portraits and then we just make them our family and we make up stories about them. And so I thought, well, that's a fun hobby.
Right. You could create quite an interesting fake family by going to Art Asylum and
grabbing photos out.
Pulling out photos. And you'd be like, yeah, and here are my Hawaiian ancestors and here are my
Yeah.
I think this guy might be a distant uncle. Linda makes a great point. She says, it often seems to me that organizing and keeping family history documents and photos is considered to be mandatory or required. I wonder if this might be characterized as a wonderful pastime or hobby for those with a keen interest, but not required of everybody.
And it most certainly is not. You are absolutely right, Linda, because as much as we want to all be permanent and valuable to future generations, we are just a temporary residence on this planet and we are going to fade away someday. And so will, you know, everyone around us. And whether or not we become part of, you know, we're not all going to be Abraham Lincoln, right? We're not all going to be remembered for 200 or 300 years. So some of us are just going to quietly fade off into the sands of time and that's going to be the end of it. And if you're not into family history and you don't want to keep up with all those records, great. You can ask if there's somebody else in the family that does care, but there's always a lot of my clients are the last man standing. They're contacting me because they're sitting there with buckets of photos and documents for a family for which their branch of the family, they're the last one alive. And there's no one left to give them to. And there's no place else for these things to go. And it's like, so this tale and this family story has now reached the end of the line. And there is an element of sadness to that. And it doesn't mean that the last one standing has to be holding on to those collections forever.
Yeah.
And you dragging them around.
It doesn't mean that you have to accept that obligation.
Yeah.
You can tell your family, Gail says, I do not have to care about this. If any of the rest of you care about this, please, please feel free to take it away.
Take it away. Exactly. Well, and my little sister, sneak that she is, you know, I've told this story before. When we cleared out my mother's house, we had to have a moving truck bring some things to Houston from North Carolina, of course. And when the moving truck got loaded, my little sister stashed all the photo boxes on the moving truck without telling me. So they arrived at my house. She was like, here, you deal with all this. And she just shipped it my way. Okay, fine. So I'm the one that has the boxes of mother's trips to Europe waiting to be filtered. And I've put some time in and filtered out some of them, thrown out a lot. But surprisingly, my mother was always behind the camera and not in front of the camera. So I would look through, you know, 300 photos and she would be in four of them. So I saved the four that she's in and the rest of the flowers and the cows and the buildings and the churches she went in and out of, off they went because I didn't need those. I don't need a random picture of a random church in Europe somewhere. I need pictures of my mother. So it's, you know, there's not a whole lot that's going to be kept when I get all the way through the pile. And every time that I've gone to dig through it, I come up with the slimmest percentage of stuff that has her in it and or people that I know in the photos, and the rest of it is landscape and building architecture that she thought was interesting, flowers that she thought were pretty,
lunch,
cows that she thought were cute, right? Yeah. She was always taking pictures of flora and fauna. And so off it goes.
Anita offers a word of caution. She says, make sure you read all the reviews before you invest in a scanner. Some of the cheaper ones will leave lines across the picture.
Oh.
My photographer relative swears by an Epson, but they all run about $500.
Yeah, that's a lot.
Yeah.
It's true. Yeah, slides are a whole nother thing. Trying to digitize slides, again, it's going to cost money. And so you don't want to digitize boxes and boxes and boxes of slides without making sure that it's worth spending the money to have it be digitized.
Anita's got her hand up. Why don't you go ahead, Anita?
Just a quickie. What I found out, and it was when I was reading all these things, I bought an inexpensive little slide viewer. Where is it? It's way over there. One of these ones, you just pop them in one at a time. And someone suggested, and I tried it. If you're looking at a slide and you say, oh, that's really a good one, maybe I should, you know what you do? You just take your cell phone and you put it over that image and you can digitize it yourself right away.
Look at that.
It is the El Cheapo way to do it. And the little viewer I got was a Ribosin or something like that. It was like $40, which is $10 cheaper than the Kodak, but there's a ton of them on Amazon.
Right. And
it's such an easy way to look at a slide, see if you want it. If you want to save it, you just take a picture with your phone.
There you go. That is definitely the busman's solution to the problem. Thank you for suggesting it.
Tammy's saying, what's it called? Let me show you.
Oh, she goes.
It is a... It is called a Ribosin slide viewer, and it looks like this.
Wait a second. We have to spotlight you.
There we go.
Almost Where's second. Anita?
You know, it's you simply... you put a slot in slot, you look at it in here, and here we go. I'm sorting photos as we're speaking, you know.
Right? Yeah, I know you've been working on that. So,
and probably this is going to come out upside down, but okay. So yeah, it's upside down. Oh well.
Okay, we don't care.
We get the idea.
But you know, you would just hold your phone. My phone's very...
Yeah, because the phone takes such great pictures now.
It holds it nice and steady, you know, better than the pictures you took. And then you've got it on your phone and you can put it in albums or send it to the cloud or do whatever you want with it.
Great idea. Remember to
turn off the light so you don't run out. This little one, it's called a Ribosin, Ribosen slide viewer. And it works with both... a cord or batteries, and the battery, they even include the batteries.
There you go, right?
Nice.
That's a good solution.
But I mean, great.
Thank you, I appreciate that. It's perfect. Shortcut it, go straight to the take a picture of the slide of your
right to the cloud, man.
That's awesome.
Thanks, Anita. Samudra asks, what to do with old newspaper articles that are interesting to me? I have no one to leave them to, but I enjoy them. And M suggested mark the folder burn on death. Or Amanda said you could put it in a file labeled not important, toss when I'm gone, so nobody feels obligated to cherish them all.
Right, exactly. And if you just find them interesting, depends on how much, you know, you can do something elaborate, like put them in sleeve protectors and put them in a binder, but if they're just in the folder and you're willing to flip through the folder to look at them or to hole punch them and put them in something to flip through so that you can go back and read them and think they're interesting, great. But I would actually mark them, you know, I just found these interesting. It's nothing that super important, you know, make it obvious that they don't need to cherish all your little videos. I mean, all your little articles.
D in the Sierras says old film processors, Film Rescue International, and that's at www.filmrescue.com. And she also mentions The Darkroom, which is at thedarkroom.com.
So that might sources be to get old stuff developed.
To get old film developed, yeah. Now, cool. Whether that will be, you know, whether they'll do other formats. M said it was 35 millimeter, which, you know, is an international standard. So I'm not sure why standard. They wouldn't develop that here, but I don't know. Emily Sue says, I suppose it's worth scanning photos if I can get rid of two bins of photos that I have that are taking up space. I'm just afraid of something happening to the files, like if the files go corrupt or they are one day incompatible. That is a risk. We talked about this before, and there's sort of a the JPEG file format is kind of been standardized, and will probably be stable for a really, really, really long time. But it's also a lossy compression method, which means you have to be a little careful with JPEG files. If you open them in a photo editor and resave them, if you're not careful with the settings, you can actually lose quality. The files can degrade. They get those little jaggies around the at the edges of color. You know what I'm talking about.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
So you have to be a little careful with that.
And truthfully, everything has, you know, sort of a lifespan. We're looking at photos, and photos are on paper with chemicals, and that's deteriorating over time.
Right, right.
Like everything has its, you know, nothing is 100% permanent.
Yeah.
We're all struggling with how far do we go to keep something and how long does it survive, regardless of the medium you're looking at.
Okay, let's talk about next week for a moment, shall we?
Mm.
According to a March report from Forbes, 49% of Americans plan to travel more in 2023 than they did last year. And travel is also expected to increase within Europe and the UK. If you're not careful, the hard work that travel entails can cut into the fun. Next week, we're going to offer strategies to plan, pack, and prepare for stress-free vacation travel. Join us Tuesday, May 23rd at noon U.S. Central Time in Zoom or on Facebook. I don't have a title for that one yet, so watch your email this week, and you'll get an announcement soon. Dee in the Sierras mentions Legacy Box, which is legacybox.com, and they will scan photos and convert videotapes. They always have sales, usually 50% off.
That's awesome.
It's one of those ridiculous retail models where everything is, it's overpriced so that it's always on sale. Samudra says, always keep three copies, one on hard drive, one on external hard drive, preferably elsewhere, and one in the cloud.
We need to do the tittle?
Yeah, let's do the tittle.
Okay, so this weekly tittle is one from the vaults. This week's assignment is to evaluate an item from the irreplaceable category of your stuff. Select a family heirloom item that you possess solely because someone handed it down to you. Mark as objective and honest an assessment as you can, make as objective and honest an assessment as you can of the item's value. Does it have real monetary value, historical or documentary value? If the item's only value is sentimental, consider whether you might be ready to let it go by giving it to another family member, donating it, or taking a few photos, then disposing of the item itself. If you don't have any objects that fit this tittle, your alternative assignment is to spend a work session managing your photo collection using the principles that we discussed in this week's webcast. So we want you to go look at your family heirlooms and see whether it's really valuable or whether it's just a family heirloom that's got sentimental value, and then decide whether you still need to be carrying it around or not for real. And if somebody else wants it more than you in your family, or if you can release it and let it go. And if not, work on photos, and we will look forward to hearing back from you about it.
One more comment. M says, if you print your scan photo using pigment ink, you have a hard copy that is more stable than the old photo. That's interesting.
If you print it with what kind of, say that again?
Well, with pigment ink, if you print it out, you know, like print it on an inkjet printer, I would think.
Oh, that's cool. Ink technology, making it last a little bit longer.
Yeah, maybe so. I'm not really sure. I don't know what the expected life of inkjet printed things is. I would think you'd have to be a little careful with that they might fade. They might be better quality right now, but I'm not sure how long they'll last.
So I just saw in the comments that Michelle says, are you suggesting that working late the night before you travel and then randomly grabbing things to shove in a case isn't a valid packing strategy? Having done that,
it's valid, but you still may regret it when you get to your destination.
Oh my gosh. I always tell everybody that it's not a bead retreat if I'm not packing at 2 o'clock in the morning the night before the bead retreat. It's 100% true. And it is, you know, it is the problem of a working full time and trying to travel too. And you're always trying to get everything ready for work before you leave. And what a mess, right? So yeah, we're just going to talk about a few things that you can do to make it a little bit easier. That's the ultimate goal. And thank you. That's, yeah, everybody has been you in that moment, right? Oh, I am. Rejoice says, I am hereby releasing my dad's report cards from elementary school in the 1930s. There you go.
Nice. Those are
something you can send on to an artist to let them use as in an art project.
Yeah, as a resource. Okay, if you're watching this on YouTube, we would love for you to join us live. To get notifications about upcoming events, we invite you to join the meetup group by visiting cfhou.com/meetup. You can also follow us on Facebook by visiting cfhou.com/Facebook, or join our mailing list by visiting cfhou.com/subscribe. We love to hear from you, so please keep your questions, comments, and topic suggestions coming on YouTube, Facebook, or anywhere else you find us. You can always reach us through our website at clutterfairhouston.com.
Thanks, everybody, for coming. We really appreciate you being here, and we will look forward to seeing you next week. Bye.
Bye-bye.